Welcome to Michigan Writers on the Air, a program about writers, writing, reading, and listening here in northern Michigan. I'm Aaron Stander. During my long association with this program, my interviews have always been recorded at the studios of Interlochen Public Radio. But as you know, the world suddenly changed for all of us in March. The interviews in this edition were done using Zoom. While the audio quality is not what you're used to, I hope you will enjoy these short interviews with writers from this area and across the state. You'll be hearing from writers you know who are learning from and making the best of a difficult time. At the beginning of each interview, I simply ask, how are you doing? And how is your work being affected? During the next hour, you'll be hearing from Anne-Marie Oman, Jerry Dennis, Lynn Ray Perkins, Ellen Airgood, Ann Stanton, Sarah Barrup-Neal, and Karen Dion. At the end, I'll be talking with our resident poet, Fleeta Brown, about our own work. So please stay tuned, listeners. I'm talking to Anne-Marie Oman. Anne-Marie, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
We're talking via Zoom, and we've had a lot of excitement already.
We certainly have.
So, Anne-Marie, you're a working writer. You are so high energy. You're working in multiple genres all the time, and suddenly the world has changed. Do you want to talk about that? I mean, you know, one day we were doing one thing, and the next day everything is different.
Boy, what a good question. And I think that is the case for so many of us, that it changed, and it changed fast. It wasn't something that we could prepare for. And as a writer, much of my daily life, my hour-to-hour life, stayed the same, with the bubble around it changing dramatically, because I work at home like so many of us, and my work with my graduate program is at home. We were still in a workplace that was familiar, but everything around it changed. And so the result of that is that the personal writing changed. My interaction with that larger bubble changed, the pandemic, the civil unrest. And all I've been writing new is poems. They've all been poems. I haven't been playing with the other genres like I normally do. And the time seems to call for that. It is a time when that consolidated language, the multiplicity of wordplay, the kind of diction that can be either very quiet or exuberant, all of that seems, those are characteristics of poetry that seem to lend to this time. And for that reason, they're, you know, nobody can say they're great literature, but that's the genre that seems to be calling to me right now.
Do you have some examples of that?
Sure. Thanks for asking. I wrote the very first one when we returned from our winter travels mid-March, and we had just gone into lockdown. And of course, that was also the same time that Interlochen was closing, and that change occurred. And so this is a part of an interaction with that. It's called Touch. I walked the empty road to a neighbor's house. I hesitated to knock. I'd have to touch the door. But then I did. She came. Her hair mussed, smiled, and put her palm against the glass. And I put mine against the cool on my side. Did it warm? I'm not sure. And I asked what she needed, and she said she was good, doing fine, though her eyes were red. And like I said, her hair was not combed, nor was mine, so what's the deal? Then she said she was isolating herself because she'd taught straight to the end, had been in her students' presence all the way until they had left her room to board the planes. And I nodded, asked if I could bring her wood for the stove. She smiled, yes, that would be good. And kindling, if I had extra, I did. And as I turned away, I saw our warming print, the glass impressed with mist condensed, the wrinkled ring where calluses had rested, and two, the see-through hollow at the center, where our palms had faced each other's, but had not flattened against that border, there, no smudge of touch. And I could see where our first language should have been.
That's lovely, thank you. We're talking through windows now, aren't we?
Yes, always, with your windows and screens and phones, and yeah, it's all artificial.
Yeah, our friends come over and we get 10 feet apart.
Yeah, it gives a whole new meaning to that old cliche about talking over the backyard fence. You know, touch seems to me that that was the first sort of physical signal of the change, is that we couldn't touch each other. And to this day, that is what I miss most, is, you know, not being able to shake hands, not being able to give someone a hug. And, you know, that is the hardest part for me on a, you know, just that personal level, not to mention all those larger anxieties of the bubble.
So do you have another poem you'd like to do?
Sure. I also, as I mentioned earlier, I have been reading and I've been walking, excuse me, I've been reading a lot more too, but I've been walking a lot. And so I've seen some things in the natural world. And I think many of us in these remote areas, not in the urban areas, but perhaps are seeing more of the natural world because there's less traffic, there's less noise, there's less interference with their natural behaviors. And so this was something that happened during a walk, and it's called Something Rising, and it's one of the more optimistic pieces. Walking the old road again, I heard them chortling high as they flew, that chuckle that sounds like family gossip, though of course it's not. They appeared below rain-stained clouds, a dozen sandhill cranes against the sky, together in a flock. Then to the north, another sound, like theirs, but off, higher, both in sky and pitch, and if I were to assign it tone, frantic would be it. Scanning skies behind the flock, there, too high, a crane almost lost in cloud, alone, struggling to keep up, but falling behind. And from it came that call. Here we are, I thought, nature's cruelty, survival of the fittest, social Darwinism, etc. We know the drill. Then, the pull of sadness, companion of the day, and so I was about to turn away when a third cry sounded through the mist, a lower honk, insistent and short, and there I saw one from the many break, leave the now distant flock, arc backward toward that wandering one, calling in return, galumph, galumph, as in, come on, come on. And with that final cry, a short, desperate, high, the lost one found its guide. I stood in the empty road, brain stunned by what I'd seen. Some animal instinct rising to save, after all, the least of us.
Oh, lovely again, and just so appropriate. We're seeing so much more of the world. And should we tell the listeners, in point of fact, as we were recording this, what did we see?
That's right. As we were also, we're recording audio, but we are also on Zoom. And we saw behind Aaron in his very backyard, a large black bear.
Walking by the window. I have never seen a bear here in all the years.
But I think that that is one of the things we're hearing a lot about, is the presence of the natural world rising in the places where things are quieter. Of course, now with civil unrest, that's not quite as prevalent. But in our remote areas where we're practicing social distancing and we're trying to, you know, keep ourselves and others safe, I think the natural world is making its presence felt. We also started a garden, which was kind of amazing. And we have had great pleasure in doing that for the first time in many years.
So in some ways, you've probably changed forever.
I think we all have. We don't know to what degree yet. People who talk about getting back to normal, I want to say, I don't think it's going to be quite the normal we knew. And for many of us, it will never be normal.
So, dear friend, keep working. Stay in touch.
Oh, thank you. And Aaron, thank you also for letting me share these with people and for being conscious of trying to state the way we have changed, to be witness to that. I really appreciate it.
Talking to Jerry Dennis, we're Zooming. I'm getting to see his office for the first time. He's getting to see mine. How's it going, Jerry?
It's going pretty well, Aaron. Hanging in there.
You are a very productive writer. Lots of things about nature and the Great Lakes. Essayist, some fiction. What are you doing now?
Well, I had a book of essays going really well through the winter until this hit, the coronavirus disaster hit us, and man, it just came to a screeching halt. I just suddenly felt insignificant. It just felt like I couldn't continue working on essays about my experiences in nature and while so much bad news is going on, so many people are in trouble and suffering and hurting. So I basically have set that aside. I'd still open it up every morning. And I try, and I count it a good day if I can revise a page. And that's about it. I can't seem to get anything new down. I have two more essays that I want to write for this collection to round it out. And I've got them roughed out, but I just can't get to them yet. So I've worked on, worked with Glenn Wolfe and Gail Dennis on a new print, you know, our Big Maple Press project, which is limited edition prints and books, special edition books. We try to bring out a new print every season, and we did that this spring, a giclée that Glenn knows a lot about, and his gorgeous illustration of a brown trout and my text. And those things are so satisfying. That has kind of saved the spring for me in professional sense. Reading a lot, you know, trying to keep notes of what's going on. But the real salvation has been getting outside. It's just plain hooky, which, you know, I've always been able to do. I call that, you know, research, right? So morelling, birding, gardening. We've doubled the size of our vegetable garden, like a lot of people have, and are recognizing how important that is to our well-being, and working on the outbuildings. You know, we live on a former cherry farm, so we have outbuildings that have been slow decline over the decades, and I've made it my project to bring back some of those to something like their original shape. So I'm working on those, and getting out in the woods a lot. Cooking is recreational for me, and I look forward to that every day. So, you know, doing the best we can, hanging in there, and of course watching way too much news and reading way too much news. Had to put a cap on that. About a half an hour a day is all I can take.
I think I do the same.
Yeah.
So the Great Lakes, your book, The Living Great Lakes, is just a masterpiece. And I know you've been wandering down to the shore, as I have been doing.
Yeah.
What's your take on what's happening? I mean, like Empire Beach is gone. Most of Lake Michigan's beaches are gone.
Yeah, it's dramatic. I spend a lot of time out at the point of Old Mission where we live and get out in the water there. And there's an island that used to be a peninsula. And for 30 years that I've been playing around out there and poking around and watching the changes that came to the lake with invasive species especially. Watched that water level rise and fall over the years, of course, which it does naturally. 7 years ago, it was virtually dry land all the way out, so that island was a peninsula. I put on my chest waders the other day and tried to walk out there on that strip of gravel, that gravel bar that was dry land. I couldn't get there. I hardly got maybe a tenth of the way there, and water was right to the top of my waders. It's just amazing what a dramatic change it is. So I've been looking into it, of course. It's, you know, my job. I've been reading the research, and the consensus is that it's a combination of the natural high cycle, but it's magnified by climate change. There's our water, our precipitation, rain and snow both have been going up very steadily for the last 40, 50 years. And the consensus among the climatologists that I've been reading is that this is going to be the new normal, that we're going to see it go down and up as it always does, but it's never going to go down as much as it was, and it could very well continue to go up higher during the high periods. And I think it's just one of the consequences of the warming planet.
So one thing, as a working writer, sales are an important part of all of our lives. What happened when the stores closed?
Oh yeah, sales came to a screeching halt. Everybody, every writer I know noticed it. Online sales have been a little bit of a pickup, but it's the stores that I worry about, how difficult it is for them to make it. And I've watched with interest as they've become really creative. Brilliant Books in Traverse City is really leading the way. They've done some pretty interesting things to keep, not only to keep sales up, but to keep their employees working. So they've got, their staff has been virtually fulfilling orders all day, packing books into boxes and taking them to the post office or having the post office pick them up. But yeah, that's to be expected. We sit back and hope that some kind of normalcy will return and that those stores will recover from this.
Well, Jerry, I'm looking forward to seeing your book of essays soon, I hope. So thank you for talking, and we'll be in touch. Take care.
Thank you, Aaron. See ya.
I'm talking with Ellen Airgood, and she lives near Grand Marais, Michigan, in the Upper Peninsula. Hello, Ellen.
Hi, Aaron.
In the recent past, Ellen has had one adult novel, South of Superior, and two middle grade novels published, and now you're working on a second adult novel?
Yeah, I've actually, I have a second adult novel coming out sometime next year in 2021. I don't know when, but it's finished and it's headed swiftly. Actually, it's in copy edits, so that's a big step.
Yes.
That's where they pick up on any inconsistencies and, a green car on page 5 is turned blue and page 10, that kind of thing. Sometimes they pick up bigger issues too, but I'm hoping there won't be anything too big in this round.
And the publisher?
The publisher is Penguin. It's Riverhead Books, which is an imprint at Penguin.
So you write and you also have a day job. Your day job is?
My husband and I own a diner in Grand Marais called the West Bay Diner. So we've been doing that together for 28 years, something like that. And the diner isn't currently back open yet because of the coronavirus issues, but we are confident that one of these days soon, it probably will figure it out.
So March 15th came along and suddenly the world stopped. Were you writing at the time? What were you doing?
March 15th, I was reading the news because that's not something I've ever done. This isn't necessarily a great thing about me, but I've avoided the news mostly as an adult as much as I could. I felt like I did better at living my life if I didn't follow the news very closely. But I started to follow it when the coronavirus became more of an issue. So I was reading the news that morning and I read that restaurants in Michigan were going to be shuttered because of the coronavirus. And I immediately that was a big watershed moment. We'd been planning to open within a few weeks, and that was quite shocking to me. And I immediately went downstairs and turned down our heat and put on my hat and scarf and sweater, thinking that it was time to do whatever little thing I could do to batten down the hashes for us, because it didn't look like our financial life would be resuming anytime soon on a normal way.
So your writing life, were you working on anything at the time?
I wasn't. I was, actually. I've been working on a memoir for quite a while, and I was busily revising the memoir when all this came along, and I found it very difficult. I kind of wound to a stop within a couple of weeks. I just couldn't make the memoir seem to matter very much.
Because?
Gosh, I don't know. It was all about what I had thought about my life as I lived it, but these big issues and questions and uncertainty, I guess, made me quite uncertain about the conclusions I had reached in that memoir. And I'm not saying that they're all inaccurate now, but my ability to care about the work was severely compromised. And I set it aside in a hope not to damage it, because I really hope to return to it. But in the mood I was in, I thought I might just really, I'm not doing productive work on it.
And your day job, what's happened with that?
That's a great question. We just continue to try to figure out what makes the most sense. We're hoping to reopen in the next few weeks. We're still not 100% sure that we will. We're a small, crowded place. We serve largely a wonderful clientele of people that come normally from all over the world, and certainly from all over the country. So we just don't know what will work for us and work for our customers very well. It's really hard to figure out. And restaurants operate on such a thin margin that if you're not able to do the volume, it becomes very difficult to make it work. And in our place especially, it's so cramped and crowded. You've been in there.
Yes, it's called the diner because it is a diner.
It's a diner. We've given a lot of thought to a lot of different things, and we're hoping we can settle on an approach and just choose it and go with it soon. But we've been very hesitant and not sure that it would really work to reopen.
You're from downstate, but you've been living in the UP a long time.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense of how your friends, your neighbors feel about this coronavirus and what effect it's had on their psyche, perhaps?
I think, I hadn't seen a lot of people until fairly recently. We're kind of the social distancing, in a way, in some ways, is a way of life up here. I mean, I live in a wonderful spot, and I feel very fortunate. I'm one of the lucky ones because we are not in crowded conditions very much up here. And so far, the rates of illness have been very low up here. So, but I have seen some people lately, and I think people run the gamut just like anywhere else. Some people feel that the restrictions are too much, and some feel that they're exactly what's needed. People are somewhat frustrated. They're somewhat worried. I think it's not too much different than anywhere else, but that because the population's smaller, maybe so far, it's not quite as intense as at other places. But with the tourism returning, I think people are feeling, some people feel threatened and other people feel it's time. So there's all kinds of viewpoints.
Well, we look forward to your new novel. The title of that is again?
The title of the new novel is Tin Camp Road.
Ellen, it's always good to see you.
It's good to see you too.
I probably won't see you in the diner this summer, but sometime soon.
I would love to see you soon. Maybe I can see you on Zoom and you can tell me how to kayak some more.
I will do that. So I'm talking to Lynn Ray Perkins, who is in her home in the kitchen. I see the refrigerator with magnets on it. Mm-hmm. So how many weeks have we been locked away now?
I think the first day was March 13th. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's about right.
So we're, going on 3 months, I think.
I think that's about right, yes. And you write young adult books, you write children's books, you illustrate the books. How are you doing?
I've been doing really well. I have felt very lucky this whole time because I'm working on a picture book, which is very, the illustrations are actually dioramas that I'm building, which is really a lot of fun, but also really time consuming, and it requires a lot of thought because I did the storyboard for this book last summer, and then when I started actually making it, each page I would get to, I would say, how the heck am I going to do that? And so I've had to think a lot. And then in the middle of working on this book, my editor said, would you like to illustrate this novel by Cynthia Voigt, who is another children's book writer? And I said, okay. And I probably shouldn't have, because I had a really sort of packed few months while I was working on both. But I guess what I'm saying is that I have had a lot on my plate that's really interesting and satisfying. So I haven't been at home trying to find things to do. I've had lots to do and really fun things to do.
And that's sort of what the life of most writers is.
True.
We spend a lot of time in little dens or offices or wherever.
Right. I know a lot of people in our field have said, you know, it's not that much different than my regular life.
It's just that we can't slip out and easily go to the store or see our usual friends. We're sort of locked away. So have you finished both of these projects, or are they still ongoing?
The one is finished. The illustration for the other author is finished, and pretty much finished building the dioramas for the picture book. But originally, I was supposed to drive them out to a photo studio in New Jersey to have them photographed. But that's not open at the moment because of the pandemic. So I'm getting ready to drive some of them down to a friend's photo studio in Detroit so he can do some test shots to see if we can have them photographed there.
Between the time that is finished and the time readers might find that in the store, that's
a year.
A year. And you're ready to start then another project?
I will be, of course, but I really feel like I need to take a break and clean the house, which has suffered during this time. And now also just to sort of remember what regular life can be like.
So psychologically, it's been both the pandemic and then the general chaos within society, but your work has kept you away from most of that?
It makes me feel like I'm doing something, you know, I don't know. It's pretty abstract in what way it might contribute to society in a way, but I find meaning in art and books. And so I feel like by trying to create something of beauty and humor that I can, I'm contributing something in a maybe indirect way.
Oh, absolutely. Lynn Ray Perkins, thank you for this conversation. You're listening to Michigan Writers on the Air, Summer 2020 edition on Interlochen Public Radio. I'm talking with Ann Stanton, the executive director of the National Writers Series. Hi, Ann. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
We're still here. People living in this area are very familiar with the National Writers Series, but there are a lot of vacationers up here now. Could you just in a few minutes tell us what the project's about?
The National Writers Series has two missions, Aaron. The first is we bring in authors, nationally renowned authors, for really good conversations, usually on the Opera House stage, but most recently on Zoom. And then secondly, we have a number of what we call Raising Readers programs for children from elementary school to high school age. And we really are focused on honing their reading and writing skills.
March 15th came along. You had a robust program running all fall into the spring, and then the world stopped.
Yeah, that was a really tough time, mainly because we had Battle of the Books. We're right in the middle of that. And it was going to be the final showdown at the City Opera House between these two teams, these teams had worked for months. And one team was actually coming back from a year ago, and they were really determined to get the championship. Ben Hatke, a children's author, was gonna show up on Friday, literally at 4 o'clock. The volunteer coordinator, Marcy Lindbergh, called me and said, "Anne, we can't have this. It's just too dangerous, it's too risky, and we gotta call it." And I said, "Oh no, what are we gonna do?" And we just went through all the options. Could we do it Zoom? No. So then we just had to just cancel it with the author, with all the teams, with all the vendors. But the most disappointing thing was that where the kids were so disappointed. That was tough. The author events were tough too, you know, making those phone calls, but the publicists were already on top of it. The authors didn't want to fly. You know, we all just seemed to come to the realization at the same time that there will be no large gatherings for a long time. Fortunately, I have a great board. We called a meeting and said, what are we going to do? And the first thing that we decided was to set up a Life in the Time of Virus website where people could talk about their experiences. And we've had these amazing contributions. And we're going to award the best essays. In fact, we just closed out the judgment time. All essays that have been contributed up until June 30th will be eligible for an award. But it's still open. We still want to hear people's stories. And we just felt like this was such a historic time, and we were in the greatest position to be able to invite essays. And then secondly, we decided to make our events virtual and not lay off the staff, keep going. We got a SBA loan, which was really super helpful, very helpful. And we got a small Makaka grant. So things have been... And then people have been donating money. So that is how we've been able to keep going. And I'm pretty grateful.
So what do you look for happening this fall?
You know, we've got an event with Chasten Buttigieg on September 10th. He wrote a book about growing up in Traverse City, attending West Traverse City High School. Of course, he was gay, and it was a very difficult time in his life. And then the book ends with, of course, meeting Pete and the presidential campaign. I want to do that campaign. I want to have Chasten here live. I don't know if we can. I know the City Opera House right now is confined to 25% capacity. So we're thinking maybe we could do it both live and film him for people who don't want to do a live event. So we're just really trying to figure that out. Probably the rest of the fall will be virtual. We've surveyed our patrons, 70% are just not going to come to an event. And, you know, I just see news of when somebody does have COVID, they've gone into an establishment. It's, you know, it's just risky, and it seems like COVID's going up, not down.
If listeners want to keep up with what you're doing, they can go to your website.
Yeah, they can sign on to be on our email list. We've been very honest with everybody on our email list about what's going on. You know, it was changing by the week,
yes.
Aaron. Like, this is live, now it's not.
Going forward, Anne, what do you have planned at this time?
We're still planning on having Battle of the Books this coming year. We hire a teaching fellow for our Front Street Writers program, which is taught at the Career Tech Center. That is still on. Front Street Writers is taking admissions. It is a fantastic program that we modeled after the Interlochen Arts Academy creative writing program. It's a little bit different, because there's a focus on what kind of job opportunities there are, but we bring our authors in to talk to these kids, which is pretty neat. Obviously that's not going to be as easy because the authors aren't coming in. Oh. So, and then we do poetry workshops. We're just going to just take it month by month, and whatever we can do, we're going to do. And if we can't do it, we're going to try to find a way around it.
Well, sounds like a real challenging time. It sounds like you're rising to the challenge. Ann Stanton, thank you for talking to me, and best of luck in seeing you.
I really appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
I'm talking to Sarah Barup Neal. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks, Aaron.
Sarah is a journalist, a visual artist, and the gallery manager of the Glen Arbor Arts Center. So how are you holding up?
Under the circumstances, fine. We have a full cupboard of groceries and a lovely home to be locked down in. Having said that, even though sometimes my husband and I feel like we've been in training for this pandemic lockdown, because we've lived kind of low-key lives way off the main road, the reality is a lot different than the thinking you're in practice. But earlier on, I used to find myself walking around the living room, and I just realized I'd been staring out the window and not quite sure what kind of things were going across my brain pan. And it just threw me for a loop. But I have to tell you that all that free floating, whatever it is, I can get myself anchored when I go up in my studio. So every afternoon, I make a point of going up in my studio, and I don't have room in my brain to take on big ideas. So I'm working on lots of little things, and I work in collage with both fabric and with paper. And I have found over the years, and this holds true especially now, that a creative practice, a creative activity, is so life-affirming and so anchoring, and I'm not concerned about the product. It's the process where all the wonderful stuff happens. And it just keeps me doing my work, my studio work, and keeping my creative muscle limber and flexible. And I'm so grateful for that. I know a lot of my colleagues, people I talk with who are exhibitors at the Art Center, are concerned because they can't focus. They can't marshal their thoughts. And I think that's one of the unexpected things that's come out of this pandemic.
Does your work look different? Is there a dramatic change, or are you just going forward?
I think what's different is I'm not worried about what it's going to look like in the end. So I'm letting myself experiment with more things. If I don't have a theme or a subject that I'm trying to create a piece of work to, I'm just there playing with my materials. I'm gluing paper down and I'm sewing scraps of fabric together. And it's amazing how when I give up the desire to control what happens during the process, there's all kinds of lovely surprises that come out. And some of those you can set aside and say, I'm going to use this later. And as you probably well know, everything you write doesn't have a particular purpose right then and there, but sometimes you can go back in your notebooks and find a particular phrase or set of words that all of a sudden are just exactly what you need right now.
So in your role as a manager at the Glen Arbor Arts Center, I imagine things will be very different this season.
They are. We closed in mid-March when the handwriting was not only on the wall, but knocking on our front door. And we had to take cover. And at that point, I had to begin thinking about what does an exhibition look like when it doesn't take place in a gallery, in a bricks and mortar setting. And that's probably indicative of my arrogance of thinking things would always go on the way I'd always known exhibitions to go on. After fighting against that, my brain opened up, and I work with some very lovely people who come from all different perspectives. So there's lots of great ideas in our staff meetings. And people began suggesting things that came from their particular perspective. And I started taking notes and beginning to rethink what exhibitions look like. So in our particular case, we started figuring out how to do exhibitions you could view online. And we've already done that for a couple of different shows. And the nice thing is you don't have to train people to look at images online. People are already there. There's no steep learning curve. And that has increased the number of people who are able to look at what our exhibitors are creating. So when we resume opening up the building a bit in June, we will not only have the next exhibition in the gallery, but we'll have an online version for people near and far to look at whenever they want.
So if listeners want to get to your website, the address is?
glenarborart.org.
So I always enjoy walking down that small road back to your beautiful little gallery in Arbor, but I will check out the online one also. Sarah Burup-Neal, thank you for talking.
Thank you, Aaron. I always love talking with you.
And hope to see you in the woods in Glen Arbor sometime this summer. Socially distanced.
You'll know me by my mask.
I'm talking with Karen Dion, the author of The Marsh King's Daughter. 2017 was a breakthrough year for you, wasn't it?
It absolutely was. The Marsh King's Daughter is my fourth published novel. I've been writing seriously for 20 years, but I tell people you have to take all of my previous publishing experience, combine it, and then supersize it to equal what has happened for The Marsh King's Daughter. The Marsh King's Daughter sold at auction. 12 publishers wanted to buy the book. We've sold translation rights in 25 countries, and it's been optioned for a major motion picture. So those are just a few of the highlights of how my career changed with the publication of The Marsh King's Daughter.
In fact, it was the number one international bestseller.
Yes, it was, in Sweden.
And you have another book coming out, The Wicked Sister?
Yes, The Wicked Sister is another psychological suspense. And like The Marsh King's Daughter, it's also set in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, where I lived for 30 years. So for me, these books are extra special just because of the connection that I have. They both feature characters who love the land, who love the Upper Peninsula. And that was the case for me as well.
So today we're talking briefly about how the last 4 months affected your writing and your career.
Aaron, it's been a challenge. You know, all writers, I think, are introverts at heart, and we don't mind staying home. But with the terrible things that were happening all around us, my personal experience, and I know many authors shared this, it was impossible for me to be creative. The thing is, writing fiction, writing stories about people who don't exist, dramatic stories, all of that just paled in comparison with what was really happening. And so I would sit down at the computer and try to write, and, you know, the progress that I was making in a week, I would normally have made in an hour on a good day. But what brought me out of that was, interestingly, reading. I was sent a novel to read with a view to an endorsement by a debut author. Her name is Rose Carlyle, and the book is called The Girl in the Mirror. And I loved that book. I got so caught up in it. It takes place off the coast of Thailand on a sailboat. Rose herself is an experienced sailor. It's a twin story. And when I finished the book, I felt so good because I'd been transported to another world for a period of time. And I realized that's what I do for other people with my stories. So that was the breakthrough for me that enabled me to go back to the keyboard and start being creative again and enjoying it at the same time.
And this new novel, is that set in the UP also?
Yes, this will be my third psychological suspense, and it's also set in the Upper Peninsula. The Marsh King's Daughter, the setting is obviously the marsh. It takes place in the Tequamenon River Valley Basin. The Wicked Sister, which publishes in August, takes place in the forest southeast of Marquette. And so the novel I'm working on now takes place in Grand Marais, with the Lake Superior being a huge factor in the setting of the book. So, you know, Michiganders know the Great Lakes are such a big part of our lives. I just had to try to convey that to other readers, how special the lake is. Of course, I was disappointed that many of the book events that were planned for my tour had to be canceled and moved online. But I have discovered that virtual events can reach so many more people than an event that happens in the real world. People are able to attend from a far distance. Distance means nothing. And so this has actually been a real boon for readers. I think it's important to remember that the book business isn't just about us authors. We're just one part of the larger whole. Ultimately, the book business is about readers. It serves readers. So the fact that we can interact with readers online and make the experience enjoyable for readers, I think is really important. And it's one of those blessings in disguise. I can easily see authors continuing to do virtual events on into the far distant future.
Oh, I'm absolutely sure that you're right. We've all been changed by this. Karen Dion, thank you for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you for having me.
Fleta Brown is here. Good morning, Fleta.
Good morning, Aaron. It's nice to see your face on Zoom.
And nice to see your face on Zoom also. And we're 35 miles apart. You're up at your cottage. But we're Zooming. We're connected. You've heard the other recordings with the other writers, and you probably have some observations on that. But perhaps we should start with, how has this affected you, your writing, and your life, adjusting to this new way of living?
Well, I have to say that the first effect of this has been a shock. You know, you have a life and you expect it to go on in a certain way pretty much. And this has been such a systemic shock that it hasn't been possible for me to continue in the same vein. In fact, when I look at things I've written in the past, they seem so much in the past. You know, they seem like they somehow at this very moment, they're not relevant. I know that feeling will ease up and eventually that they'll have a different kind of relevance. But right now, things are moving so fast. And you can't get hold of that fast moving world in any kind of contemplative way. You can't get hold of it and look at it very, very well. So the things that get written, I think, are often first draft kinds of things that I was thinking about when I was Poet Laureate of Delaware, that after 9/11, people were coming out with just a huge rash of poems, and most of those poems were of the moment and were kind of intended to be that way. But I was listening to the other writers that you've been talking with, and I've been very jealous of the ones who are in, Ellen Airgood is in the middle of editing her adult novel, and Lynn Ray Perkins is doing illustrations, and Jerry Dennis is also doing some revising and working on some new prints with Glenn Wolfe. And I'm thinking, you're very lucky if you were in the middle of a project that you needed to continue with. I, on the other hand, have just turned in a book of poems that'll be out next spring. And I also have a book of essays that, if all goes well, should be out in the fall of 2021, and that's all done. And so the only thing I've done is I looked back at my book of essays and I thought, could I do one more essay on the pandemic? So I did some research about pandemics and wrote an essay that includes some thoughts about all the pandemics, the major pandemics that have happened. Actually, it was kind of comforting for me because this pandemic, compared to some of the more striking ones in history, isn't quite yet, at least, quite so bad. Half the people died. I think it was in the Black Death. Half the people in the world died. So, but still, you know, it put it in context. I don't know, but that essay, and I'm not even confident about that yet, that I may include it in the book. I've just been kind of stymied for not being able to figure out exactly what to do now, what to do next. I've written a few poems, but I do seem to be catching hold again. I've written a few poems lately, but not very much. It's just such a strange time. And it's like, all you want to do is you check the news, and then you realize you're compulsively checking the news. So you try not to check the news so much, and then you're doing it again. And it just feels like, I think about the huge events of the past, that the writing that's come out of it, some of it has come out of the very moment and has been truly wonderful. Some of it has required a lot more distance. And it's not that distance always is the right thing, but I don't know, right now, how is it for you? How are you feeling about your own writing right now?
First of all, I had a full calendar and I was busy with a lot of things, including trying to finish a novel. And then one day I had nothing on my calendar. I mean, that was shocking. It actually worked out okay because I was stressed over doing a lot of things. And one of the ways that I got away from that stress was to settle back into the book, take a lot of time, move slowly. And I lost myself in the story, which took me out of, you know, the present. And that was a nice refuge.
Lucky you. Yeah, what's been my refuge, and you'll think this is kind of amusing being a mystery writer, it's been mysteries. So I started with P.D. James, and then I got interested in some women mystery writers, and I read all of maybe three or four series, which I enjoyed enormously. And just lately, I've been reading Martin Walker, first male. I don't think there's a slight difference maybe in the tone. So I'm reading his Bruno Chief of Police series right now that is set in France. And the comfort of those has been amazing to me. I know that it's going to work out. I know that there will be tension in the middle of the book, and I know that I'm going to have to read carefully so that I don't lose track of characters. But I know that it's all going to round down to something comforting, that the bad guy is going to get caught and taken away. And in this culture right now, it just feels so good to have a bad guy get caught and taken away. So anyway, that's what I've been doing. It's but to keep me sort of halfway sane. And then of course we're at the lake, which helps enormously to stay sane. I normally am sitting here at my desk at the lake working away, and I've been very restless. I'll work for a few minutes and I'll get up and do something else. And my discipline about other things is not so bad. I can continue with a daily routine to some extent. My writing seems to be a little, what I said before, I feel sort of in shock still. My system is in shock about the world right now, and it's just hard to sit quietly and work with that on paper. Well, I do have one poem, Erin. I have it because the Theodore Rethke Society puts out a calendar every year, and they ask poets this year to contribute a poem for each month of the year. So I wrote this. They wanted it to have Theodore Rethke. I'm talking about the poet who lived in Saginaw, Michigan. They wanted the poems to have something slightly to do with Rethke, if possible, or the greenhouse or flowers or something. So here's the poem that I wrote. Phalaenopsis is a Greek word. Hundreds of Phalaenopsis orchids are lined up on the greenhouse trays. We have captured them from Asia, delicate butterfly blooms, with our clumsy hands and made them perform. They have learned, like the rest of us, how to squeeze themselves into the given world. They twist their snaky roots inside their plastic cups. Rethke said he wanted to use himself as material for his art, to go back over his life again and again and struggle through dirt toward the light. If you need to use the word light for what you sense, or call it lack until you burst through. Like everything beautiful, it is difficult. You feel hopeless. No, even the word hope would be Greek to you. There is only this urging, this motion, not even a sequence, but a twisting, as if you were lodged in the crux of a tree trunk and all the dense forest were your heart.
Oh, so, Fleeta, that's lovely.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad.
And hopeful.
Yeah.
Well, I will be talking to you again in a month or two. I presume we'll be talking by Zoom still.
I presume by Zoom.
Stay well, please, and enjoy.
You too, Erin.
Thank you for listening to Michigan Writers on the Air. And my thanks to all the writers on this program who invited me into their homes, kitchens, offices, wherever they write, to share their thoughts with us. And a very special thanks to Daniel Wanchura for all the extra time and energy that it took to glue this edition of Michigan Writers on the Air together. And as always, this program is a production of Interlochen Public Radio. Be sure to listen next time to Michigan Writers on the Air on IPR News Radio. Until then, this is Erin Stander wishing you great writing, great reading, and the best of all words.